latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Gulfstream, back at Gulfstream Park, and speaking of being back at Gulfstream Park, in some ways, Vic Stauffer back at Gulfstream Park. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you? I am looking over this card, and it is amazing. The racing around the country on Saturday is just fabulous, and I'll be calling Oakland, but I'll be playing the Pegasus World Cup Betting Challenge at Gulfstream. It's something I didn't even know that I won until I got an email saying I won an entry when I finished fourth in the opening day tournament at Santa Anita. So it's really cool.
We'll get some. I'll take advantage of that and get some opinions as well as what we're going to do about Saturday at Oaklawn, where the Southwest came up very strong. But before, you know what? I'll save the Gulfstream conversation for in between when we talk about Gulfstream, because I want you to recount your days in the booth here, as well as some opinion sharing. So let's dive in actually to. The next step. We've already gotten through Smarty Jones. Now here's the Southwest on our way toward the Rebel and the Arkansas Derby. And this is a fun group of three-year-olds.
It's a real fun group of three-year-olds, and it's a real fun race to handicap, because clearly the favorite and the deserving favorite will be Arabian Knight. He ran on Breeders' Cup Saturday in the first race and was super impressive, running a very, very vast figure. Steve, you remember the horse Vekoma, the stakes winner Vekoma?
Of course, of course.
He was the strangest traveling horse you'd ever see. You couldn't even ride him that close to the rail because of the way he paddle wheeled his left front.
Right.
I mean, he was all over the place, looked like a blender. Arabian Knight is kind of like that. He is not the most beautiful mover that you've ever seen. I was trying to figure out, I was watching the head-on in the race at Keeneland, trying to figure out which lead he was on, and I really couldn't do it. Now, it's all very well and good to not look beautiful, but still be able to run very, very fast, and he can do that. However, there are big question marks with this horse. One, he's never run here at Oaklawn. He's never tried two turns, and he is probably going to take a lot of heat on the front end. You've got a horse called Corona Bolt who comes out of a sprint win in a stake at the fairgrounds. You have Jace's Road, who went right to the front and won the Gun Runner. And so I think that race, Arabian Knight is vulnerable. Should he be the favorite? Yes. Will he likely win? Yeah, if you ask me who I think most likely would win, Arabian Knight. But I think there's a horse in there that's really interesting, and it's a horse called Hit Show. He's by Candy Ride. He's already won here at Oaklawn and really looked good doing it. He was just getting going. It was one of our short stretch mile races where we finished at the 16th pole. And when he got there, he was just getting going. Galloped out beautifully. He's a May foal, so he's still learning. Each of his three races has been better than the one before. Manny Franco comes in and rides him for Brad Cox, and I think he's got an upsetter's chance in the Southwest number 8 Hit Show.
We talked about Hit Show yesterday with Sid Fernando. Sid was a big part of the mating of Hit Show, and feels like, you know, of the Brad Cox three, you mentioned Corona Bolt coming off the Sugar Bowl win. Jace's Road has got some appeal just because of his versatility, I think. Feels like he can adjust to almost any scenario.
I think he'll probably have to adjust, even if he doesn't want to. Yes, he went wire to wire in the Gun Runner, but they went 24 and 248 flat. Corona Bolt or Arabian Knight can throw 22 flat, 44 flat at you. And the one thing that we know about Mr. Baffert, you don't even have to ask about instructions if you're riding a two-year-old for Baffert, because the answer is go. Go, 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 put pressure on, continue to put pressure on, and eventually they'll crack. And that's the way he's going to have Johnny V ride Arabian Knight. He's just going to send him, and if you want to try to go with him, go ahead. Good luck with that. And if you want to try to make up ground late, well, he might cut the corner and open up. So that's why race shape, I think, is so important in this race. And it gives a horse like Hit Show, or even a horse like Sun Thunder, who is very interesting as well, I think it gives them a puncher's chance, especially now that we're out to a full mile and a 16th, where the Smarty Jones was just at the short stretch mile.
Give us a feel for some of the other participants, and that includes the locals that are preparing to start from the rail, actually. You know, Kenny McPeak certainly busted out early in the meet and seems to have leveled off a little bit. You know, we had, what, the four wins going back before the calendar turned, and here is Sun Thunder off the maiden win and going to save all the ground and, you know, try to put in a run. What, coming in off of a bullet, what do we make of Sun Thunder?
He is a player. I really believe that. when we run our flat mile races here at Oaklawn, we back up and we start and finish at the 16th pole because it just wouldn't be a long enough run into the first turn to make it fair starting at the regular finish line. So very rarely do you see horses win from well off the pace with that short stretch. One of the most amazing races we ever ran at Oaklawn was when Tom Stay Todd did that in a stick. But it doesn't happen very often. Sun Thunder came from 100 miles out of it and blew to the front at the quarter pole. And I think he even surprised David Cabrera with how big a run he got. It wasn't the toughest field in the world. Actually, the horse that finished second, King Russell, is in on the same day. So we'll see how that shakes out. It wasn't the toughest field, but to be able to win circling when there's a short stretch, that's something that picks your head up. He's improving. He's by into mischief. He'll save every inch of the ground. He's a player. No doubt about it.
Sun Thunder. And I've not seen, you know, I printed the early PPs, seeing as how you're drawing these well out in front. How about some lines? Vic, what are you got him to run down?
Yeah, sure. Sun Thunder's 10-1. Corona Bolt is 6-1. Jason Road is the second choice at 4-1. Western Gent, 20. Frosted Departure, who's already a stakes winner at the meet for McPeak, he's 15-1. I guess the morning line maker doesn't think he'll stretch out. Arabian Night is the even money morning line favorite. I actually think that line is dead on, right? I mean, you could make him 4-5, he'd be 3-5. Make him 3-5, he'd be 1-2. So you can never make a short price favorite too low. And so even money, I think, is pretty right on. Red Route 1 is interesting. His fourth in the Kentucky Jockey Club. Some would say he lacked room. Some would say, when I watched the movie, thought he didn't lack room because he wasn't good enough to get into a position where he could get in trouble. But he did run fourth to a nice horse called Instant Coffee. Mm-hmm. Then you have Hit Show at 10-1. And the long shot in the field is El Tomate, the tomato. And he is 30-1 off one maiden victory at Remington. Favorite is Arabian Night at even money.
What's Red Route 1 price-wise?
He's 10.
10-1. That's a nice number. Marcus Hirsch was talking about him, I think, either yesterday or this morning, and talking about that trip in the Kentucky Jockey Club. And, of course, Al Gold's Instant Coffee, a winner at Fairgrounds on Saturday. And it's funny, the horse that Red Route won was behind in the street sense as well. The two fills, the Ravelli, came back and was chasing Instant Coffee home last week. As well in the LeCompte. So it's a fun group. Asmussen, you know, certainly will typically be heard from on this sequence of races. You'd mentioned Western Gent for D. Wayne. McPeak's got the other one as well in here. Frosted Departure coming off the sprint to victory with Cisco Arrieta. It's a good group because if it's not going to be Arabian Night, there's three or four possibilities.
I completely agree. And again, Steve, I think really the key is race shape because we know Arabian Night's going to go. I can't imagine them trying to take Corona Bolt back. I mean, they never really have. And so he might try to beat Arabian Night to the first turn. And if that happens, now we've got a speed duel with other horses that could press as well. I mean, Frosted Departure just won a sprint stake at Oakmont, going 21-4, 45-1, and he was heading in for the lead. So, and you would expect they'll send him to try to set it up for Sun Thunder. So the thing that makes the Southwest just not a coronation for Arabian Night is definitely race shape for me.
Let's talk about the Martha Washington, which is the first of the three stakes. The Martha goes as the fifth, and then the eighth. We'll talk about the sprint in a minute, the King Cotton. And the Martha Washington, I was on hand at Remington for the trapeze. Olivia Twist, probably the least known undefeated horse in the country.
She's the real deal. And I'll tell you, this guy, Todd Fincher, he is starting to pick up heads all around the country. He's based around the Southwest, but he's sending horses all over the country and winning races. Mm-hmm. She got an amazingly good trip in the trapeze, but she took advantage of it and won very, very easily. When you're undefeated, that's never a bad thing. And I personally think she's 2-1 on the line. She's the second choice, with the favorite being defining purpose for McPeak. I think Olivia Twist is a legitimate filly. Christian Torres is our leading rider. He's winning four a day. And defining purpose to me is vulnerable. She won the year's end. She looked very good doing it. I don't think she beat a very good field. The horse that was second in that race is a Riley Mott horse called Unify, who ran back in a little easy allowance race the other day and couldn't have run worse. She got a perfect trip and would not fire a step. After that, the horse that was third in the year's end is Take Charge Brianna. And she is not going to make you forget about a really good three-year-old. So at 6-5, defining purpose to me is very vulnerable to an undefeated filly. And I think Olivia Twist is going to be super tough in this spot.
I agree. And I'm a big Fincher fan, going back with all the Peacock, the parade of Peacock runners, and has certainly, you know, been a presence. Spreading his wings, as you reference, away from New Mexico a little bit. Not entirely, but a little bit. Let's turn to the King Cotton then, and the road toward the graded Count Fleet and Whitmore and so forth. We've got Gunite in here that figures to be, you know, very much a short price, but I've become a big Flash of Mischief fan. What a job Broberg's done with this one.
Well, you should become a big Flash of Mischief fan because he is a very serious racehorse. When he won the David Vance, when I was doing all my pre-Breeders Cup work, I thought, wow, you know something? They kind of tricked him. He kind of tripped Broberg into running him in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. You know, hey, you're going to take a horse that won a non-graded race at Remington and run him in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. That's crazy. But as it turned out, it wasn't crazy. A, he bounced in that race, and he figured to. He came back on very short rest, and he was running against the best sprinters in the world. So, okay. But he only got beat seven lengths. So he comes back to Oakland, and he runs in the Ring the Bell, and he could not have looked any better. He didn't beat much. Cavada and Chatelot are not going to make you forget about really good horses. But the way he looked doing it, now he's training the House of Fire. He's won over this racetrack. He's 9-5. Gunite is 7-5. I think that the separation between those two will be bigger. I think Gunite will go lower. Flash of Mischief will probably stay at right about 9-5 or maybe even drift up to 2-1. And I'm going to tell you something. If Gunite doesn't run his A race, Flash of Mischief will blow him off the racetrack.
I won't argue. I won't argue at all, and have been impressed. I thought it was interesting that Paul McGee sent Miles ahead into this spot, and I've been a fan of this one too, and I tell you, Vic, you know, you play at a high level and contest scene as well, and you can imagine the chagrin when it came to that Kelly's Landing at 15-1 this past summer. Gets beat in neck by Aloha West, who was on the comeback trail, and I thought we had him at $30. That one, that's one of those ones that, you know, you wince and it's tough to unwince.
Yeah, it takes a Breeders' Cup winner to beat you out of a $32 horse. I mean, he ran entirely too good to lose that day.
Yep.
Sometimes in this game, you can be right, and you don't necessarily get the money.
Yep.
But sorry about that. That's the great Queenie, who's named after Zenyatta, and when she wants her breakfast, she wants her breakfast. Quiet.
That's fine.
So Martin Garcia rides miles ahead. Not a great race. At the program's last time out at 72, but has good races to go back to. He's kind of a queen. We don't exactly know what kind of trip he'll get. There's not a crazy amount of speed in this race, which would make me think that a horse like Miles Ahead could be in a right spot. There's a couple of really fun horses in this race when you're getting down to longer shots. One is Tejano Twist. There's a few things that you can't do really forever. And Lee Trevino once said, there's two things that never work, and that is dogs that chase cars and pros that putt for pars. And the third thing that never works is late running sprinters. They just, unless your name is Whitmore or Midnight Loot or Elmhurst or Lita Chastise, there aren't very many of them that can make really impacts in sprint races. Tejano Twist is such a cool horse. He's won three in a row, all from the clouds, especially the last one when he came from, at the 3/8 pole, he couldn't get a nickel in that race. And here he comes flying for Chris Hartman. This is the toughest field he's ever faced. And he's going to have to close into what I don't think will be all that crazy fractions. But what a cool horse. And then you got an Archie bred in this race trying to beat Open Company called Provo.
Sure.
And oh my goodness gracious. I was alive to a $4 pick five to Mrs. Beans in the last race. Johnny Ortiz hadn't won a race the whole meet. And then here comes Garhol and he runs completely off the screen. And then he hadn't won another race since. So yeah, that was a tough beat for me. He couldn't have looked better. But big, big difference beating Arkansas allowance horses and now beating horses that'll go on and run in a graded race like the King Cup. Really fun race, though. Really fun race.
Yeah, the Ortiz barn is in a funk right now, and Garhol, though, is the kind of horse that can bust those open. But everything obviously goes through Gunite, the four-year-old Gunrunner colt for Winchell Asmussen and Ricardo Santana Jr., who actually has, in fact, Tyler Gaffalione had to leave. This photo session went for literally an hour, and he's in the first race. Otherwise, he would have stayed and sat. So I basically told him we'll get him down the road. But Gaffalione has been riding Gunite, and Santana gets back aboard. Last seen on him in the Champagne, going back to 21. One of the four-year-olds that starts the season here. Speaking of four-year-olds, Vic, too, before we talk about Gulfstream, Barber Road and the Ortiz barn, Barber Road is back for his four-year-old debut in a very heady ninth race, mile and a 16th, first-level allowance that follows the King Cotton.
Yeah, it's his first start as a four-year-old. His last start as a three-year-old was awful. I mean, he was 4-5. They went plenty fast enough in front of him in that race. 23 1/5, 46 4 at a going mile on 16th at Oakland. I'm so sorry about that, Bart.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Silencio, loco perro. Shut up. And he just kind of slept in third. I mean, the horse that came back, Winterwood, came back and beat two prime horses. So that was impressive. But Barber Road just ran around there. And last year, as my partner in crime, Nancy Holtz, calls him, the crazy Colombian, Johnny Ortiz couldn't lose in the first part of the meet. Now he's 2-32, and one of them was Garhol, who was 3-5. So Barber Road has to step way up off of that race to get a big piece in here. And I don't see really any indication to make me think that he's going to.
Yeah, fair enough. It's a 12-horse field, too. And some familiar campaigners, Bandit Point for Bob Klein. And how about Heir to Greatness off the Claim for Broberg? Michael Pewich has got Call Me Fast, and Pewich, of course, very clever. I always look twice. You've also got Ben Diesel here for Lucas from Mr. Horton as well.
And Ken Gage. Steve's been off to just a tragic start at the meet, as you've seen. I mean, he's 6-89. We know that's not going to stay the way, but Ken Gage has got races to go back to that could kick their spellings out of this field.
Now, the card, as you referenced at the beginning of the visit, the card is really good. And I never expected to print all 11 races, but I ended up doing so. And, that includes the second, which is a good allowance. Mucho, speaking of Ortiz, Mucho is in there. You've got a couple of maiden races, including, I haven't done any of the pedigree work yet at all, Vic, but that is it the seventh, I think, right? Is the seventh the maiden group?
Yeah, the seventh and the third, both.
Now the seventh is going six, and the third goes long. You got, looks like you got some decent pedigrees in here to consider. So lots to appeal on the Saturday card, centerpiece being the Grade 3 Southwest.
It's really good, and it's going to be fun.
Let me avail your visit and take us back. Vic, what years did you call here?
My first year was 2000. I came in and I followed Tom Durkin, which was completely intimidating. And after I'd been there a couple of years, he said, you know, you sound a little like Tom Durkin. I said, well, there's a reason for that. It's because I'm not good enough to sound exactly like Tom Durkin. If I could, I would. I was there 7 years. My first Florida Derby was Hal's Hope. And the 80-year-old trainer, Harold Rose, and the 45-year-old jock, Roger Velez, beat Wayne Lucas and Pat Day on High Yield, and Hal's Hope was 40-1. My last Florida Derby was Barbro, and when he went on to his sublime win in the Kentucky Derby, I loved my 7 years there. One of the years was the second to last year I was there when we called the entire meet on the scaffolding that was sitting on the outside rail and only about 15 feet up off the ground, because during that time they were doing the reconstruction of the entire grandstand at Gulfstream. Some would say they don't know why they ever did that, because it was such a great place. But so that was challenging as a race caller that year. And I felt so fortunate and so blessed to be able to call 7 years there. And that announcer's booth is very well manned right now by Mr. Pete Aiello, who's doing one hell of a job calling the races.
I'm just looking at that stretch, and I'm trying to think of the ones was here definitely for Barbro and High Fly. I was not there for Friends Lake, actually, and I think I was here for Empire Maker, as I recall.
Yeah, dialed in one that stretch too. We had Nathan Zito on our show the other day, and boy, what he is just so much fun. Takes him an hour and a half to write 60 minutes. I get that, but that's okay. Yeah, so Monarcos, let me see if I can get the seven I called. Think about this. The first one was Hal's Hope, then Monarcos, Harlan's Holiday.
Yeah.
Friends Lake, Dialed In, Barbro, and missing one.
Well, no, Dialed In was later. You know who you're forgetting.
Who am I forgetting?
You're forgetting Nick. You're thinking a High Fly.
I'm thinking a High Fly, not Dialed In.
Dialed In was later.
Right. That's right. High Fly. So is that seven? Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
So Monarcos, Harlan's Holiday, High Fly, Friends Lake,
Barbro,
and what?
Empire. Empire Maker.
Empire Maker.
Empire Maker.
He turned out to be okay.
Yes, he did. That is.
Yeah, what a great time I had at Gulfstream. I loved it there. If I hadn't lost the job at Gulfstream, I wouldn't have met my great, an unbelievable sainted wife, Tina, who is just the greatest person on planet Earth. So I look at it as even though it broke my heart to leave Gulfstream, I look at it as they say, everything works out for the best.
Well, let's work out a couple of winners potentially. And you mentioned that you're involved in the Pegasus Betting Challenge. This has become, you know, kind of a mid-major on the contest front, given the prize. And, you know, the opportunity comes at a good time of the year. A couple of opinions. Start with the classic. And what do you make of this Pegasus? It's a fun betting race.
It is such a good betting race. If you're an angle player, you can find a horse. Like, why the barn? He's 4-for-4 at Gulfstream.
Yep.
If you're a trip player, you can find a horse like Proxy, who's probably going to get the best trip because he's drawn on the fence in what's going to be a wild scramble first part of it. If you want to go for the now horse, it's Skippy Longstocking. If you want to go for the class, it's clearly Cyberknife, an Arkansas Derby winner, by the way. If you want to go for a horse that can be in and out but has massive races to run, then you're looking at a 15-1 shot with Paco Lopez called Simplification. It's just It's as good a betting race as you could possibly hope for. And that's not talking about Baffert coming in and bringing Defunded, who might just wire them as good as he's gotten. I thought it was very interesting that IRAD rode Defunded in the race, taking off Skippy Longstocking. But, you know, you have to make tough decisions. The Harlan Holiday clearly was the major prep for this race, and Skippy Longstocking ran a very fast race. He ran a fast race on Thoroughgraph, and he ran, obviously, a fast fire. He went 106. To me, at the end of the day, I think Proxy's probably the right horse. And if you switch the post positions and put a couple of these other horses that I just thought, I'd probably take them. Like, put Wide Barrio there, or put Cybernet on the fence. But his win in the Clark was such a grinder's type win. And Gulfstream, to me, is a grinder, especially at a mile and eighth, is a grinder's type racetrack. You have to be able to continue to throw in their 13-second eighth of miles. And if you can do that, you can run some other horses into the ground. And you're going to get a very strong finish with Rosario. You know he's going to save ground on both turns, which in this race could mean the world. You and I both, Steve, are big Mike Stidham fans. He can train anywhere and win any race and knows how to train a good horse. But this guy is just now getting to be at his very best. I wish that he had worked there, and I wish that he had run once at Gulfstream for me to have a feel for that. I don't get that, but I do get an $11 horse with Rosario drawn inside, and if he moves forward just a little bit off the Clark, his number is right there. So he's probably the horse I'm going to use if I'm lucky enough to still be alive in the tournament when we get to that race.
I'm going to keep coming back repeatedly here, and especially at 15-1. I think Get Her Number is very dangerous in here. I know that the distance question is going to be on people's minds. Look at what Peter Miller has done with him with the 6 furlong, 7 furlong, and 1 mile published works. He did get routes of ground earlier in his career. This has always been a racetrack where if you're going to take a horse that's a middle distance type and or even a one turn type horse and stretch them out, this is the right place for that historically. You get Luis Saez as a side bet in here. So let Kieran McLaughlin handicap the race for you a little bit. I'm betting Get Her Number somehow, some way in here.
That's the thing about this race, because this is a very, very good racehorse. And you're going to get 15-1. I think you'll actually get more. To me, he's an outsider, and it's because it's a mile and an eighth. And he's tried that distance against really good horses. He's tried that distance. He ran in the Arkansas Derby, finished fourth behind Superstock, which wasn't the toughest Arkansas Derby.
Nope.
And then he tried the turf at a mile and an eighth. And to go from the cold up at Aqueduct and then ship down into the warm at Gulfstream, and Jerry Brown will tell you this from Thoroughgraph, is a tough, tough question to ask, especially when he went back to California. Everything that you said about him being a very, very good horse, I couldn't possibly agree more. But in this scenario, on a warm day in a 12-horse field, on a racetrack he's never stepped foot on, going a mile and an eighth, I'd have to get more than 15-1. I don't like him.
He's going to be on the tickets, at least. I mean, listen, the horse, obviously, the horse to beat here by a wide margin is Cyberknife. And you know, this is one of the real frustrations of this reconfigured oval, and the fact that you have a race like this that they're going to give away $3 million, and it's the final race of his career, and you draw a post that you know, statistically you're eliminated, you know, before you get in the gate.
I've never understood it. I do not get it.
Very tough.
And people have talked about it. Horsemen have talked about it. People in national media like you have talked about it. you have to hold your breath when the pills are coming out on draw day, because if you get drawn outside, you can win, but you're just totally up against it. You're giving away lengths that there's nothing you can do about it.
Yep.
And it's why he's a bad 5-2 shot. Is he the best horse? Yeah, I think he probably is. It's close, but I think he's the best horse. Another thing about Cyberknife is he's a complete goofball. I mean, he makes mistakes in almost every race that he runs in. And now running at Gulfstream for the first time, dealing with that short run of the first turn, I don't think you can make mistakes in a race like this and win. Is the talent there? Of course it is. But even now, at his making his 13th start, when you go back and look at his movies, he always does something that makes it harder on himself to win. He's just a goof. And maybe when he's up to 24 or 36 starts, which he won't be, because as you said, this is his last start. I just don't think 10 hole first time at Gulfstream, and the fact that he will probably do something that will frustrate Giroux, I think he's a bad favorite. I really do.
Yeah, that seems to be the universal agreement, and I think people from that standpoint are essentially 3 hours, Dave. It was my first Dave Joseph asking, how long are you on?
Hey, Dave Joseph, what a nice man.
I get to sit back. I'm letting Vic do the talking here. Dave has breezed in here a couple of times. It's hard to believe he doesn't know that I'm on 3 hours a day, though. Now he's thrown me off completely. Essentially, Cyberknife is a takeout equalizer in here, neutralizer.
I think you're right. When I used to handicap the Kentucky Derby by making believe that I was saying, and now entering the winner's circle for the Kentucky Derby is so and so. And then when you said that, if it just didn't sound right, usually it wouldn't. It worked.
I like that. Yeah.
When I just think for Pete to say, now coming into the winner's circle, the winner of the Pegasus World Cup is Cyberknife. For him to say that at 5-2, here's the way I would put it. Can we hear some motor? You bet on a horse like Cyberknife over and over and over again, you will end up with no chips very quickly.
That's true.
Now, does that mean he can't win on Saturday? He's a wonderful racehorse with a ton of talent, but I cannot.
You just can't see it. I got you. I hear you.
I just can't.
I hear you. You may need to cover him in the Coast to Coast Pick 5, by the way. For those that haven't seen from yesterday after the draw at Santa Anita, the Coast to Coast is going to run this way. The Santa Anita second. Then we're going to come here to Gulfstream for the Filly and Mare Turf Pegasus, the 11th. Then back to Gulfstream for the 3rd, and then the 12th and 13th, the Pegasus Turf and the Pegasus Cup are the 5 races in the Coast to Coast this week. And this has been a quick success, the Coast to Coast Pick 5.
Really good stuff. Doesn't it have a low takeout too?
It's got 15%. It's a dollar. Yeah. At some point there'll be a carryover, which makes it fun. The carryover provision. There's no consos, so everything gets paid back out. Nothing gets siphoned off the will pay. So there's a lot to like. I love these. I mean, going back to the Magna 5 and to Sal Sinatra's 60-minute pick 6, the old NTRA pick 4, which should be resurrected. Those were a lot of fun. Vic, have you done enough work on the two turf races on the 11th and 12th at all?
I gotta tell you, I really probably haven't.
All right, that's fine. That's all right.
I've done some movie work, but I haven't looked at the numbers yet. I basically have spent about 3 hours on the Saturday card at Gulfstream, and 2.5 of it was on the big race.
No, that's good. No, that's what we had. A thorough conversation.
Actually job one, once I walk Zenyatta and she stops barking, and I'm going to go back and dive further into that. I'm trying something that's going to be crazy. I don't even know if it's going to work, but I'm going to try to play the tournament while I'm calling the races at Oakland. It turned out to be an absolute disaster because you can't make advanced wagers in a cash tournament. I'll have a buddy up there with me to help. And obviously, first priority will be to try to make some good race calls at Oakland. But I think I'll be able to do it. The good thing with me is that I'm a win and exacta player. That's it. I don't get into many daily doubles and certainly hardly any trifectas. And so I'll be able to sort of map out a strategy. And if it goes the way I kind of hope, then I won't have to call any crazy audibles like I did in the Breeders' Cup BCBC this year, which I completely called an audible and it worked out. But
yeah. Good fourth, right? Fourth?
I think it's going to work out. I think it's going to work out. And, you know, you can't win if you ain't in. A chip and a chair, baby. So I'm in there.
Good job. Well, you think about what Eddie Olczyk, Eddie plays in the BCBC while he's on the air. So you can do it.
I think Matt Bernier does too.
Yeah, that's right. And other, you know, there's been others that that pull it off. So good luck, and we'll talk soon, and we'll see you in a few weeks. We'll be down for, I guess I'm in for Rebel Week. I think I'm in for Rebel Week.
You better be.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk before then, though.
All right, Steve. Thanks very much. Call anytime.
Goof on the Roof. It's Vic Stauffer for everybody, and there's the action at Oaklawn for Saturday that's cleared out. And I wanted to get that in, and I wanted to get Nick Tamaro in for the Houston Ladies Classic so that we've got clear deck for tomorrow. And, in fact, the one thing I will do here as we reach for Rich Eng, I want to look at Santa Anita. I did not look at the overnight, and so I do not necessarily know what that second and third. The second's the Las Virgenes, as it happens, where Justique is going to come back after missing her last assignment. And field of six for the Las Virgenes. Be interesting. Doug O'Neill's filly, that Broadway Girls, I mean, she's going to be, well, she'll be on the lead. I suppose that Faiza, she'll be in fairly close attendance, right? Yeah, but not a lot of pace here for Justique to try to close into in the Las Virgenes. So that'll be the opening leg of the cross country, then the three Pegasus events. The $500,000 filly and mare turf. Then they come back to Santa Anita for the third race. Third being an allowance, going a mile on the grass. Calbreds, I think, right? Yeah, this is, well, I would tell you how many's in, but I can't get, I cannot get the screen to change. So so four out of the five, or let's see, three out of the five races on the grass. And let's see, here we go. Let me try. I don't know why that, did it move? Yes, it did. It did move. Okay. So we do have a nine-horse field in that turf allowance. Is that nine or ten? One, two, three, four, five, six. Nine is right. All right. So fields of six and nine at Santa Anita, and then a fuller field. So Santa Anita second, Gulfstream 11th, Santa Anita third, Gulfstream 12th and 13th. And the whole sequence starts at 4 o'clock with the Las Virgenes, and then the Pegasus. Pegasus, I think, goes off fairly early, right? Five something. So it's a tight sequence on Saturday. And Hammer's going to go over the sequence tomorrow. 5:40 is post for Pegasus. So an hour and 40 minutes for the five races. That's cool. Sometimes, so far, these first 3 weeks, it's kind of been different structured. And then later today, they'll announce the Sunday lineup as well. All right. Let's close out the morning. Gosh, the morning has flown by. And we got to get Rich Eng in here, and we'll see what Richie's got going. I hadn't that necessarily given an advance notice to Rich as to what we might discuss, but here he is. Rich Eng, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Coming to you from Gulfstream here on Eclipse Eve. Not even Eve, it's Eclipse Day. I may have to start heading for West Palm as soon as I get off the air.
Oh my! should be a fun show. I'll look forward to it.
Yeah, what's the over under on how long the thing runs?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
What do you make the over under on how long the thing goes?
Well, don't they have Academy Awards like a time clock and a bell or something like that?
Yeah, I think they do. They do. They're promising. Well, I do see Tom Law was nice enough who joined us early this morning. Tom actually sent me the agenda, and there's an after party that's supposed to start at 9, presented by the Flightline Syndicate. Which I guess they think they're going to win. I guess they think they're going to win Horse of the Year.
That would be a very short price, that's for sure.
Exactly. 5:45 cocktails and red carpet show sponsored by Keeneland, and then 7 o'clock dinner and awards in the Venetian room, and then back to the Mediterranean at 9 for an after party. You better have your party shoes on between this event tonight and then here Saturday. This is the first time I've been in attendance for a Pegasus, because invariably a number of these events have taken place the same weekend as NHC. And so we're in Vegas, Rich, and you know, we've had NHCs to cover at the same time. So this was really the first opportunity.
Yeah, this was that would have been the anniversary of the Jonathan Kinchin affair, where he left Vegas and ended up going to Gulfstream Park for the Pegasus.
Yeah, our March get together. Actually, Rich, you of course will be counted upon for co-hosting responsibilities in March.
Oh, I look forward to it. Ever since we've kind of teamed up on that, any assistance I can offer to you. I remember the 1 year where you had you were almost on the IL with the
unbelievable
with the throat. But God, you were a trooper. I can't, folks. You should have seen Steve drank. He must have been gallons of tea with lemon and honey, and just trying to keep that throat going.
You know, it's fun. Knock on wood. This past year, the most recent NHC, we were good. But there's been at least three times, and you explained it to me, the Vegas throat that some performers have had to deal with, and you know the atmospheric conditions are just they lend themselves to that kind of irritation or whatever it is. And I was. But basically three times I've been affected, and the one was really bad. I mean, that was tough. Yeah. That was tough. But you guys all pitched in and you know, we made it through. And of course the action writes itself. You know, we were sort of anticipating Michael Bacek, and you can talk to this, Rich, as a veteran contest player, about trying to qualify, you know, for a certain spot, you know, World Series or in this case NHC, and particularly the NHC, you can get desperate as the cutoff starts to approach, and Bacek, the champ, you know, this isn't like the Masters or the U.S. Open where you get ongoing exemptions. You get one exemption into the next year, but that's it. If you don't qualify, you're not part of the field. And Bacek was getting a little getting a little antsy, and he came through last weekend and qualified.
Oh, fantastic. Clutch performance. And I know that there is usually a Wednesday a last chance qualifier, and I've known more than one person who has come out to Vegas and had not qualified yet and rolled the dice in that Wednesday tournament and got themselves in.
Yep.
I know the odds are really long, and you have to have a lot of confidence in yourself. And heck, you know, I guess the only downside would be you have to spend a few more days in Vegas, but that can be quite enjoyable. But I know people come out for that Wednesday last chance tournament, and the pressure is on, because if you can't get the qualifier, then unfortunately you can't participate over the weekend.
Well, so Bacik, you know, I had said to him when it looked like he might not make it, I said, well, I'd be happy to have you come and you know, handle co-host the responsibilities along with, you know, with the regulars. But then he qualified. So, you know, I can't, we'll certainly talk to him plenty of times. We always do. But no, he's free and clear at this point. I had Vic Stauffer on to talk Oaklawn earlier, and it was interesting, Rich. He referenced one thing that it popped in my head to ask you about. You know, in cash money tournaments, he's going to play in the Pegasus Betting Challenge that, of course, people can buy into, but he actually got in through opening day at Santa Anita. He finished fourth in that contest, and he earned a seat in the Pegasus. He said in the live money tournaments, he strictly bets win and exacta. And over the years, we've talked with you about, you know, the approach and the evolution of approaches in contest play. And, you know, there's been such a move in that direction, essentially. And in fact, Nick Tamaro was on today too, and Nick jokingly said that he would sit in because he says he never does well in the NHC. So, but he does great in live money. Talk about the evolution of your approach when it comes to, you know, the difference and the advent of the live money contest.
Well, in all honesty, I have not played in live money. Every contest I played in has been mythical money. The standard point system of either two win, two plays, 20 win, 20 plays, or 20 to win, or 100 to win, you know, whatever it is, and mythical. I have not had an opportunity to play live money, but I certainly watch what's going on, and it's unbelievable, you know, as far as you know, how people attack it. I think the methodology, Steve, there must be a lot of different ways, because, you know, people have had success doing different things, and you brought Vic with the win and exacta, and, you know, one thing that I guess has jumped off the page at me over the years is that there are certain people who will kind of nurse their bankroll along and try to make sure they can get to the final race, and then they go all in, almost like the World Series of Poker. They go all in on a hand, whether it's a horse, a gimmick, or something, and just try to blow things up in the final race of the tournament. So those people obviously are more than willing to go from, you know, whatever amount of money they have to absolutely zero. But the upside is, you know, if you hit a score at the end, well, you know, that's it. That gets the job done for you. So that's always really interesting, too.
You may not play in the cash contest per se, but I mean you're playing with cash, obviously, you know, day to day. And how much that's, I don't know if I've ever asked you that question. We've certainly talked about the proliferation of multi-race wagers. And, you know, here I just was referencing, as you were coming on, the new, you know, coast to coast. I mean, we've seen more and more multi-race track betting opportunities. How has your day-to-day cash play, how has that changed, Rich? I mean, do you find yourself, you know, over the years, have you gravitated away from, you know, what made you successful originally?
Well, you know, I'm not much of a pick six player unless there's a carryover or a force out of some kind where it's a must pay. I do play pick fives, and I mentioned on the show before, my limit is actually probably a lot lower than a lot of people's. I try to keep my ticket around $50, and I try to find one single, and then that gives me four other races I can be more aggressive in. And, you know, as far as that goes, that's a lot of my gimmick play. But, you know, I'm a very maybe ham and egg, meat and potatoes type player. I'll bet win place. And I love betting doubles, and I love betting exactas, you know, because those are much easier tickets to win and much easier races to handicap. And, you know, the thing about horse racing, there's a lot of luck involved. You can do great handicapping and, like, you know, A, B, C horses, and something can happen during a race and the Z horse wins and, you know, blows up your ticket. But, you know, if you're limiting yourself to two spots, first and second, or two races, A and B, then, you know, you kind of limit the luck a little bit, and you can really hammer it. I'm not afraid of betting a larger amount, say, on doubles or exactas if I really have everything figured out. And, you know, when I'm playing an exacta, for example, I mean, if a horse I like is a closer, I'll certainly try to maybe team him up with horses who have a lot more speed. And my goal is to try to get two horses to finish up the line together so I can cash the ticket.
Well, that's what it's about. Well, a couple of minutes toward the top of the hour to send everybody out into the race day. And, Rich, you got a simulcast idea today?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a strange territory for me, usually for the show, is I'm going to go with a horse as a first-time starter. But very interesting to me. But in the fifth race at Aqueduct today, 6.5 furlongs, the maiden special weight for New York Breds. I like the number three horse, Gem Mint 10. That's correct. That will help to see how the announcer, Chris Griffin, handles that one. Gem Mint 10, first-time starter from Ray Handle with Dylan Davis up. But this horse has been working well and has interesting pedigree. And it's just one of those kind of races. It looks like the horse to beat would be the five, Dr. Kraft. But I'm going to go with a first-time starter. We'll go to some uncharted territory for me. Race five, number three.
Interesting. It is when you say unfamiliar, one of the things as public handicappers, and when the occasion arises, you know, to give a play of the day or that, you know, that kind of thing, usually, you know, those of us that do this, Rich, right, we kind of stay away from maiden races and unraced horses because there is such an uncertainty and such a volatility involved.
Yeah, first-time starters, you know, if you're handicapping a field of 10 and four, five, six of the horses are first-time starters, you really don't know for certain who is going to be the hot horse or two until the betting opens up. So it's, you know, it's difficult. And when you're playing, say, a horizontal wager where there's a couple of maiden specials and you got a bunch of first-time starters, that can make that ticket really more expensive because it's, you know, if you get beat by one of these first-time starters, you know, you kind of feel like a dummy for you know, leaving the horse out. But I've just heard this horse has been working real well, and it just seems like a wide-open race. And if I can get 5-1, Steve, I think it's a worthwhile play for me.
Well, Ray, you know, Ray Handel can win with a firster. It's not necessarily his wheelhouse. There is a little bit of pedigree, though. There was a Normandy Invasion sibling, Athenry, that was pretty fast, that debuted as a three-year-old and was a two-time winner, as it happens. And that might be an indication. Leia Ban, not the greatest first outsire, the late Leia Ban. But there's enough in there. At 5-1, that's not a, you know, not a bad number when you're trying a gambit like this. Number three, Gem Mint 10 in the fifth. Rich, enjoy the weekend, Pegasus, and the Eclipse Awards tonight, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, we didn't even touch on our NFC Championship game.
Go ahead.
Eagles and the 49ers.
Go ahead. What do you got?
You know what I'm going to do is, in honor of you, because I know you're rooting for the Eagles, I'm going to bet the game so that we can both be happy. I'm going to bet a six-point teaser, Cincinnati Bengals. Right now they're pick here in Vegas, so that'll make them plus six to the 49ers. They're plus 2.5. That'll push them up to 8.5. So I've got a two-team six-point teaser, Cincinnati plus six, San Francisco plus 8.5.
How about that? That actually is very appetizing. All right, Rich, good luck, and we'll check in next week.
Thanks, Steve. Good luck, everybody.
Rich Eng, betting on horse racing for dummies, and back with the second edition, of course. Order it now, wherever fine handicapping tomes are sold. Mixed offer for the action at Oaklawn, plus a little more. Dave Hill for the championship game action. Tony Black was terrific today, of course. Nick Tamaro for Sam Houston. And Tom Law, who will be handed a trophy tonight. Looking forward to... I'll do some paparazzi stuff. I'll send out pictures and so forth tonight from the Eclipse Awards. Back here tomorrow for the big Twin Spires weekend preview at the races. Talk to you in the morning.